Well, today I want to share a sermon with you about doing too much and what happens to everyone and everything around us when suddenly we're not able to do that all anymore. I am obligated to open with Luke 4, verse 23, "Physician, heal thyself." This ever-important biblical reminder is there for those of us who speak things to remind us that we have to recognize our own need for the very things we say. So as I stand here today, having just come off a week in the hospital, currently working half-time as I recover from a cycling accident, I need to say clearly, the sermon is as much for me as it is for you. But it is for you, too. I've actually been looking forward to sharing this sermon and this fable that drives it with you for 2 months. As soon as we decided to do the sermon series on relationships, I knew I wanted to preach this one. I did not realize it would be my first Sunday back after having an accident. The irony of this timing is completely unintentional and not lost on me. But I would like to share with you another one of Friedman's fables. Now, Rabbi Friedman, wonderful, wonderful wisdom shared through story. The reason I love these stories is because if we talk about our own lives, sometimes it's too personal, sometimes it's a little hard to see. But if it's just a story, we can see and hear things that sometimes we're not willing to notice in our own lives. There are so many in here. I look forward to doing a book study on this with you at some point in time. But let me share the story of the sucker fish with you. Once upon a time, there was a scavenger fish that lost its taste for this is going to need a little editing. Let's go with stuff. It doesn't have the same flair as the word that's actually written in the fable, but we're a family-friendly kind of a place. So, stuff. Once upon a time, there was a scavenger fish that lost its taste for stuff. She was your normal garden variety scavenger and had never previously shown any signs of being different from the other members of her species. She lived in a normal-sized tank with members of several fish schools and from the very beginning of her association in this ecosystem had functioned in perfect harmony with her environment. She never got in the way of the others, and they reciprocated, allowing her to do her thing. She always knew her place, the bottom. She never let stuff pile up, never rose to the surface unless some debris had failed to settle. And even more, as more and more fish were added to the tank, never, absolutely never, did she tire of taking crap from the others. Daily, she swam below, keeping the tank clean. Though in truth, she was not out to keep it clean. The orderly environment was more the accidental result of the scavenger doing what came naturally. Nor, for that matter, did the others leave her alone because they understood how they benefited from her actions. They just did. In other words, to an outsider, the scavenger might have appeared to be playing a role. This is a far different thing, however, from saying that she or those who benefited from her ever thought about it in those terms. After all, one might have well have just said the others were there to give her something to do. Yet on the day she stopped eating stuff, the effect on the entire tank was like a tidal wave. Every aspect of this living environment seemed to be affected almost at once. The first to react were the guppies, normally a sprightly crew that glided to and fro, often in threes or fours. They seemed on this day to be unable to stay in school. The males in particular, normally swaggering a lot with their colored tails swishing this way and that. The males had great difficulty staying aplumb, and rather than flaunting their customary well-attired air, they appeared disheveled. Another inhabitant of the tank that became noticeably disturbed was a small baby piranha. Its growth had been limited by the dimensions of the environment, and the various instincts natural to its kind had never shown at all. On this day, however, ontology broke through its progeny. The piranha went wild, now with no teeth to speak of, though it didn't do much damage. Still, it began to behave in a way never seen before, whereas previously it had moved quite slowly, lackadaisically taking a morsel here and there. Now, it swam back and forth in an aggressive frenzy, hereto unknown in this network. It darted, stopped, looked around menacingly at nothing in particular, and tried to bare its little nubby teeth in a threatening manner, only to turn again and hone in on some other phantom object. If this personality change in the piranha seemed odd, however, at least it was keeping with its kind. Not so the changes that appeared in the angelfish. Normally a haughty type that propelled themselves about with confidence and independence, they seemed on this day to be bewildered. It was though they had been flayed of their internal guidance systems. Usually their largesse provided a buoyance that enabled them to remain motionless observers for long periods of time. But now, one found itself unable to remain at rest, while two others became permanently motionless, huddled uncharacteristically in a corner, and a fourth began rolling on its pancake body on side, trying to float on several occasions, when it rolled a little too far and ended up swimming upside down. No living part of this system was unaffected. The seahorse lost its familiar S-curve. After trying to squiggle like a worm, eventually gave up in frustration, curled itself in a ball, and hid in the corner. Some of the more luminescent types lost their capacity for illumination. And a particularly squat and dreary-looking thing that normally drudged along by itself suddenly became euphorically friendly. Skipping a ballet around the tank, it scared the others with its sudden efforts at closeness and one-on-one flirtatious on occasion. For her part, the scavenger fish that had lost her taste for stuff moved about, unmoved. If she sensed changes, she showed no response to them at all. She kept circling in all her old patterns, but without her usual appetite. She seemed only to be going through the motions, but the changes had not gone unnoticed outside the tank. One day, suddenly as if taken by an unseen hand, the scavenger fish disappeared, plucked forth never to return, and just as suddenly, plop, another of the same ilk took her place, whereupon the newcomer proceeded immediately to take up the former's job with diligence and relish. Quickly, things returned to normal. The guppies regained their grace, the piranha became docile, the angelfish found their gyroscopes, the seahorse uncoiled, luminescence returned to the environment once more, and the nameless squat and dreary one was once again squat and dreary. As for the previously resident scavenger, this fish out of water was cast in the refuse pile the next morning, eliminated by whoever in that other system took out the garbage. I love this story. These last few weeks, we have been focusing on relationships and how messy they can be. We've used the creative storytelling work of Rabbi Friedman in his Friedman's Fables. You see, his work, at the most basic level, is built on something called differentiation. This is an important word for us to talk about. Differentiation is knowing where to create space between us and others so we don't just get caught in their stuff. Much of the work in this area that we've engaged in so far, the conversations of the last few weeks, typically addresses things that others do that we have to be careful of. Or sometimes we'll talk about how we have to be careful how we respond to others' actions. Today's conversation, however, is a bit more internally focused. Today we ask ourselves how we affect the system around us. How do we affect our family, our friends, our coworkers, our clubs and teams, our activities, our associations, all of the groups that we connect with? It's important for us to consider how our decision to try to do too much can lead to system-wide failure at our own burnout. Now, when we talk about burnout, we're talking about how our decision can destroy the entire group that we're a part of. How our burnout can burn down everything we hold dear, especially if we have worked ourselves into a spot where we're necessary. But it feels so good to be needed, doesn't it? Until we can't be anymore. I mean, so many of us think we're being helpful by continually picking up more and more stuff from those around us. But we're not being helpful. We're setting up a catastrophe. This little scavenger fish did so unknowingly. She was doing what came naturally. Oh, it can come naturally to us as well, can't it? I swear, phrases like, oh, sure I can. Oh, I'd be happy to. Well, if no one else will, someone needs to do it. Some of these phrases are programmed into our DNA, I swear. Before we know it and without question, we've taken on more stuff than we can handle, and then one day, we lose our taste for it. Maybe that's too much, we hear echo through our head, when suddenly we cease to function. And then no one's able to function anymore. We've brought down an entire system out of our desire to be helpful. We've created this dependent, codependent, non-functioning system that's now overrun by all of the stuff we used to take care of. And if we don't make it back to our former over-functioning selves, the system finds someone else to use until they too end up in the same circumstances. Now, it was interesting picking a scripture for today, because the Bible is full of burnouts. I mean, seriously. Our Bible is full of burnouts. Kings and prophets, figureheads, all of them. These are people who fall victim to their own inability to set boundaries and healthy limits. These poor examples are why some of the best people in my life have often reminded me that saying no is a ministry too. Someone else gets a chance to participate, and you can actually do the things you already said yes to. But of all the biblical burnouts to choose from, I settled on Peter, that fisherman-turned-disciple. Peter, oh Peter, he is so overeager. He is trying so hard all the time. He's constantly taking on too much, and he's this well-intentioned burnout. Peter is us. Hear the story in Matthew 14. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. After he dismissed the crowds, Jesus went up to the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat was being battered by the waves and was far from land, for the wind was against them. Early in the morning, Jesus came walking toward the disciples on the sea. And they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them, "Take heart. It's me. Don't be afraid." And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come out to you on the water." So Jesus said, "Come." Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came to Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened and began to sink and cried out, "Lord, save me." Or a little bit later, Matthew 26, Peter says to Jesus, "Though some may become deserters, I will never desert you." And Jesus said, "Truly, I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me 3 times. And Peter said to him, "Even though I would have to die, I will never deny you." Now Peter was sitting outside a bit later in the courtyard. A servant girl came to him and said, "Weren't you with Jesus the Galilean?" And Peter denied it. "I don't know what you're talking about." Then he went to the porch, and another servant saw him and said, "This was one of the men of Jesus of Nazareth." And again he denied it. "I do not know the man." After a little while, bystanders came and said to Peter, "Certainly, you are one of them." And then he began to curse. And he swore, "I do not know that man." And at that moment, the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered what Jesus had said. And he went out, and he wept bitterly. Now, when something happens over and over in literature, we call it a motif. These are examples of what I like to call the Peter bites off more than he can chew motif. There are tons of them. Pretty much every story in the Bible with Peter is part of the Jesus Peter bites off more than he can chew motif. I mean, can't you just hear him as the seawater rose above his thighs? Maybe that's too much. Or as he weeps bitterly out in that courtyard. Okay, maybe that was too much. It seems that Peter is not ready to accept human limits. Peter always feels the need to push things. "No, I can handle that." To quote Top Gun, "Son, your ego's writing checks your body can't cash." He keeps asking for responsibilities he can't handle. And listen, before somebody gives me the shoot for the moon, even if you miss, you'll land among the stars speech, I'm not saying you should set the bar low in your life. I'm saying we need to decide how many high bars we want to consecutively vault ourselves over. How many big hills do we want to send our bicycles careening down? There's a reason. At the Olympics, there's the high jump has a crash pad on the other side of it. The bar is set high, and they know that, so they prepare for it. You'll notice that there aren't 20 high jumps set up in a row like the hurdles. And yet, for some of us, that's how we live life. We keep trying to go over them as if it's a race. There is no hint in our scriptures that Jesus would have been disappointed in Peter if Peter had stayed in the boat. Jesus didn't say, "Does someone want to come out? Come on, who wants to?" Peter volunteers for this. And Jesus outright tells the disciples, all of you will abandon me. You know, a simple, hey, Jesus, I hope I don't and I'll try not to, probably would have built a little more trust in the relationship. Set a realistic expectation, Peter. Just say you're going to do your best. Peter is like us because he wants to do more. There's nothing wrong with wanting to do more the first few times we choose to. But at a certain point, maybe it's just too much. Any of you who know me, even more any of you who have ever seen my calendar, know that there is an irony in me preaching this sermon. I almost wore a name tag that said pot and was going to hand out name tags that said kettle for the rest of you to wear, and it would be great. What I'm asking of us today is that we all take a look at what we're taking on in life, or we're going to end up getting plucked out and thrown away. We affect our systems, and we can bring them crashing down if we're not careful. We can bring them crashing down out of our own desire to help them. And if we can't see it coming, if we can't notice it ourselves, we need to help each other see it. This is our chance to be community, to honestly look at one another, and as my wife says quite often, if you're not going to quit doing that much for you, I need you to quit doing that much for me. We need to be honest. We need to see where things are and recognize that maybe, just maybe, sometimes, that's too much. Amen.